One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back.
Oh, my word.
Dear?
There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes.
Why do I always let my curiosity get the better of me?
It seems on a moment too soon.
I'm not the professor. I'm a doctor.
I have a feeling we're already too late.
Don't sit up there.
Why not?
Because it's not a chair. It's the most dangerous weapon in the universe.
Run for your life.
It's been a long time since I've been so low to you.
Pop falls out of the sky, man falls out of the box, man eats fish custard.
Everybody, just shut up.
And what is this display, now as amusing as you are?
Shut up, just shut up, shut up, shut up, shut it up, up, up.
Hello everyone, it's the TARDIS Blend, episode 77, in which we review episode 6 of series 8 of Doctor Who, the episode titled The Caretaker. My name is Greg Davies, and I'm here with...
Tom Cheridar.
And with us tonight in the house is a very special guest, Anthony Ha. How you doing, Anthony? It's been a long time since we've had you on the show.
Yeah, I think I was on maybe a month or two before the 50th anniversary special.
Right. Actually, you know what's funny about that is that you bring that up. I was reviewing some statistics the other day, and the statistics that we have, the numbers we have for TARDIS Blend are respectable. They're pretty good. We get a few hundred listens at, through geeksofdoom.com, although the metrics at Libsyn can be a little bit misleading sometimes. But what I found looking at the stats is the preview shows we do, like that one with the preview for the Day of the Doctor, are our most listened to shows, into the thousands. We're kind of like stretching into new boundaries there. Well, I guess we should do more of those, Tom. But yeah, that one, Anthony, that was one of our most successful podcast episodes, that one.
So what you're saying is that doing this post-episode review is just a huge mistake and no one's listening.
No, not at all. No, we got the hardcore fans listening into the reviews.
Right.
But the pre-show stuff, like the before a season is launched.
We should preempt with like a short 10-minute pre-show every episode.
Let's do a precognizant episode of every Doctor Who episode.
Yeah, we'll just wing it, man. We'll just do
time, and then tell people how it is, with our foreknowledge.
Exactly. We'll say we traveled in time, and we've come back. We've watched the episode, and it's crap. You don't need to watch it. Actually, I found this episode not so crap, to be perfectly honest with you. And Tom, as always, I'm going to hand it over to you first. This episode is The Caretaker, Earth-based episode. Action light, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
it was.
Very action light. But you know what? That's okay, because they did something that I was complaining about that they lacked in the first episode, and they've slowly gotten stronger. They took a break with that Robin Hood business, but they came back pretty strong. We got a lot of character development here.
Yeah.
Across the board. I was
well,
really
it's written by Gareth Roberts. He's well known for strengthening character development, so...
I felt good. I felt like we got a very good image of what the Doctor is going to be like.
I think so. I agree with you there. But he's a little all over the place this season. It's always hard to.
Oh, I think he's going to be the angry Doctor.
Yeah, he's most definitely the angry Doctor. I mean, there's touches of.
He's going to be the crotchety Doctor.
Yeah, he's got touches of John Pertwee.
But still very funny.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he's got touches of John Pertwee and William Hartnell in there, but at the same time, he's got that Tom Baker humor.
It's him.
And it's totally Peter Capaldi all the way through, through and through. And I think I'm trying to cast my memory back, Tom, to our first season of the TARDIS Blend, which would have been Series 5, and that was Matt's first season. And I think, if I could recall correctly, we were still... around this stage, halfway through the season, trying to put our finger on exactly who this dude was and how he was, what kind of Doctor he was going to become. And
yeah.
I think the conclusion we came to as time went on was that it wasn't really until we got to the sixth season that we really saw Matt as fully the Doctor. He had fully found his stride.
And I feel like it's taken Peter Capaldi six episodes to do that.
Yeah, he jumped into it pretty quick, I thought.
Six episodes, and he's there.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, I think he got in there a little early. I think the only episode I thought that there was a bit of mischaracterization of the Doctor was the crappy Robin Hood episode. So
I like the Robin Hood episode. I'm sorry.
Did you really?
I did. I mean, you know, I'm not going to claim that it was great, but I feel like it was fun. I was really dreading it because I feel like those kind of like goofy historical ones are usually you're kind of like, oh god, I just got to get through it. But this one, I had a good time.
But that was the whole point, though. Really, I mean, Tom and I can be real dicks sometimes when it comes to reviewing Doctor Who. We can be, and we're very harsh on the series. And in fact, I'm even like one of the points. I'm only giving this episode a 3 out of 5.
That would be my rating as well.
And the reason I'm only giving it a 3 out of 5 is because there were 2 points that they lost from me. The first point they lost was this huge missing opportunity. They missed a huge opportunity with this. Coal Hill School, as you guys probably know, has been in the history of Doctor Who. We first saw it in the new series. In the Day of the Doctor, we found out Clara was teaching there. But in the classic series, it was the school where the Doctor's granddaughter was going to school, and Ian and Barbara, the school teachers, were the first companions. Now, Ian Chesterton, who was the character's name, played by William Russell, he's still alive. He's in his 80s. And in Doctor Who's 50th year, they missed a huge opportunity by him not showing up in this episode, because there's a few, if you have a look at some of the episodes we've seen of Coal Hill School so far, Ian Chesterton is name dropped on many of the signs as like a member of the school board and so on and so forth. They really missed an opportunity.
We don't know what happened, though. Like, they could have reached out and he declined.
Or, I mean, I don't think they're leaving the school after this episode, so he could show up later.
I'm sorry, I have to be with the hardcore Who fans on this. A lot of them are really disappointed. And I am too. I mean, this is...
did they know that he had never been asked and expressed interest?
I don't know whether they knew or not, Tom, to be honest with you. And to be perfectly honest, that information is kind of the stuff that the BBC don't really release. Unless you're John Barrowman and you talk about that stuff all the fucking time.
Yeah, yeah. I was just about to say, like, Shatner and his
oh my god,
cameo appearance in Star Trek 3.
That's worst.
You know, I was just wondering. You know, sometimes actors are like, "No, I hadn't heard that, but I'd love to do it."
It just 2 seconds, mate. That's all it would have looked like. Yeah. Just an old man looking over, seeing the TARDIS disappear or something. A nod of the head and a wink of the eye. He didn't even need to say anything. Well, just a nod of the head.
I would imagine part of it was also because he had a cameo in Adventure in Time and Space last year, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if there's an element of just
William
like,
Russell.
Okay.
William Russell was it? I think he did actually.
He was the cranky parking attendant. I remember that because I was like, why is this guy so prominent in this episode? I don't understand. And then I googled that. Oh, okay.
You're absolutely right. He did have a cameo in that. So they probably didn't ask him, Tom. Unless he's sick. Now the other thing, the other thing that this episode lost a point for, that Matrix flip. You know the one I'm talking about, the forward flip over the robot. Yeah. That was terrible. I mean, honestly, sci-fi and everything. I mean, the thing is, this season has been built up as far as the character of Danny is concerned, is that he's a very serious person who. Has a lot of pride, but also a lot of regrets about his soldiering days. And, you know, very clearly he's got combat experience, he's got military experience, and, you know, the whole thing about him doing this massive backflip over this robot was just, or front flip, I should say, over this robot was just utter ridiculousness. It just didn't even fit. It doesn't even look like, I mean, it was like something out of X-Men or something. It just didn't fit.
I don't care.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying. I'm not going to disagree, but I certainly was not as bothered by it.
Right. Yeah, it bugged me. Like I said, Anthony, like Tom and I are real dicks about the show. but I think we have to be because and I we try to every now and again we try to explain this to the listeners as well. We love every episode of Doctor Who, even the ones that we've poo-pooed on this show. We love rewatching them. We love watching these episodes, and if anything, you know, just imagine that what we're doing with the rating system that we're giving Doctor Who is that we're making a comparison with the previous benchmarks that Doctor Who has set. We're not really reviewing it as, you know, whether it's a crap show to watch or not. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing the podcast. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, it's not like we're comparing it to the Golden Girls.
Right.
No, that's interesting because it reminds me. I had a friend who I would watch Doctor Who with once in a while, and at one point I was getting very critical of the show, and he said, "Oh, come on! I mean, the whole point of watching the whole thing is because it's just very campy." And I got very quiet and very indignant, and I was like, "No, that's not it! Like, the reason I'm complaining is because I think it's capable of so much more than sometimes what it settles for." So I totally am on board with that. I do also, though, think that I think, you know, that kind of like physical realism isn't necessarily what I look for. I mean, I don't mind when the show gets really goofy as long as it's a kind of goofy that I think is fun.
I agree with you there. And my summary of that is like, what good is nachos if you can't have a bit of cheese on it, right? You know what I'm saying? Exactly. Like, you need to have a little bit of cheese to enjoy your nachos. But in this one, there's sometimes where you get the fine grated cheese and it just blends beautifully. But that front flip.
No one wants to eat chips.
Yeah. Okay. All right, let's talk about the good stuff in this episode. Anthony, actually, let me ask you first. Tom and I have both matched ratings on this 3 out of 5 for us. What would your rating be of this episode?
I would say probably also a 3 out of 5, like a perfectly good, ooh, enjoyable episode. I think the first half especially, I loved it all the way through. I think when it got more serious, I still liked it, but I didn't feel like it was completely earned. So for me, it was, yeah, again, like I, you know, not, you know, one, I'm, an episode I'm glad I saw, but not necessarily one I think I'm going to be revisiting or was, you know, super excited or impressed
about.
Right,
so it fits in well with the season, but it's not up to the standard of, say, Blink.
Right.
You know, it's a good episode. It didn't have anything, extraordinary about it, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I will say that actually for me this season so far, I mean, if I compare it to pretty much any other season of the new Doctor Who, I think like this season has been, maybe has had fewer sort of home runs, but I have not felt like there were any duds. And this, I think, continues that trend of like every episode we've seen, I've liked. I know you guys didn't like the Robin Hood one, but for me, I feel like it's been very, very consistently, oh, really good. I mean, not necessarily amazing, but all solid.
I personally think it's been on par with all of the previous Stephen Moffat seasons we've had, with the exception of the start of Series 7. With those episodes, which were totally unnecessary with Amy and Rory. I mean, they should have said goodbye at the end of Series 6. But
I'll agree with you.
But if you look at Series 6 and you look at Series 5, and we're 6 episodes in for each of those seasons so far, though it's pretty much on par. There's usually one episode that's very middle-of-the-road mediocre for Doctor Who. In our case, it was the Robin Hood one. And then we've previously had the Curse of the Black Spot and Victory of the Daleks.
That's what I was thinking of as well. Yeah.
You know, but the other ones have been pretty good. So, you know, and we've had a couple of home runs. Listen was a home run for me. I really enjoyed that. And Tom and I both enjoyed Time Heist and Into the Dalek immensely. So, this is, I think we're doing a pretty good batting average on this season so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, particularly like with Capaldi as well. I mean, his performance in every episode so far has been really, really,
I think, excellent. I think this was his best yet.
Really? Do you really think so? I'm not so sure about that. I enjoyed him in it.
Not so much as like having witty one-liners or being, you know, funny in any sense. Just in terms of like playing the Doctor, like going through the motions and making me believe that that's a character. That's like something that you can expect from him. I think that he's had an opportunity to do that at times in some of the past episodes, mm-hmm. but not at length like they did here.
I would say also, I would compare it, you know, to another Gareth Roberts episode, The Lodger, where I think that was the first one where with Matt Smith, it really sold me on Matt Smith because, you know, he was in every scene. You're so convinced that he totally doesn't belong in this normal environment, and he's completely alien.
Interesting.
And I think that was true in this one too. Where as soon as he puts on the caretaker suit, you immediately know that something's out of place, and it just is immediately funny.
That coat is awful too, by the way. The overalls, it just doesn't suit him at all.
but it looks good matched with the like Ghostbusters pack at the end.
Yeah, totally.
Speaking of clothing, how about that scene where the doctor thinks that Clara's with the teacher who looks kind of like Matt Smith?
Oh, that was very amusing. That was very amusing. But here's the thing that's really interesting about this is that Danny is actually more like the doctor than the doctor. Well, maybe he does comprehend it, but the whole scene where he's like trying to explain to the doctor that he was a soldier, but he teaches math, and the doctor couldn't comprehend or retain that. It's because
he's just being a dick.
It's because it's exactly like him. It's exactly like him.
And he's the wise mathematician. He hasn't had the full realization that he's the one that created Danny Pink.
Yes.
Soldier Man Danny Pink. He hasn't had that realization.
You know,
yet.
I think he
is never supposed to be a soldier.
Yes. Hang on a second, though. I think that he actually has. I think there was a deeper element to this episode, and I've yet to see anyone point it out. And it's really got to do with Clara and her lying. Ever since Listen, she's been lying continuously to both the Doctor and Danny about each other. Right?
Right.
But the Doctor, I think he's onto her. The most obvious indicator of that in this episode.
Oh, he did. At the end of the episode, he said that.
Well, halfway through.
You still haven't explained him to me.
Exactly. That was the most obvious most obvious one. But there was a sneakier clue at the beginning of the episode. He didn't need to show up at her house to say, "No adventure today. I'm going into deep cover." He didn't have to do that. He could just show up at the school. You wouldn't have lost any plot if he just did that. That whole purpose of having that into the plot there was to highlight the doctor's onto her. He knows that she's lying. And I think, you know...
Let me finish.
Anthony was going on about how alien Matt Smith was, like, in the lodger and being in public and trying to live on Earth and everything like that. But we didn't really see that with Chris Eccleston or with David Tennant. It was sort of hinted. And what I'm kind of getting from the Moffat era is that each doctor exudes their own alien-esque in their own way. And I think, as far as Peter Capaldi's doctor is concerned, he's very, very serious, but he uses dim-wittedness to hide his... to exaggerate the alienness. Like the whole thing about, did you have a wash? Or what's that on your face? Do you have makeup on? Or whatever. You know, it's like, he's seen this stuff before. He's not that stupid, and I think he's onto her.
Yeah, but didn't they sort of already establish, like, at the end of the episode, that he was being a crotchety asshole and showing up because he was curious about Claire's boyfriend, and then he was super judgy?
Well, it was kind of implied. It was implied.
Like, that's why he showed up, because he was trying to get information.
Yeah, I mean, he could have dealt with this robot at any period in history. I mean, and there was no reason for him to go to Coal Hill School. He could have gone directly to the location where it was at as well. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that he could have dealt with. No, seriously, that was his excuse to try and find out more about what Clara's going on about and why she's not being so truthful. And I think her lying is going to key in very, very, you know, pointedly to the overarching plot as time goes on. I made a note about this somewhere. I'm just trying to see if I can find it. But that discussion that they had, that the couple had at the end, here we are, the final discussion between Clara and Danny. She says, "I trust him. He's never let me down." I'm not sure if that connects to the overarching plot, but it really stood out to me. Anthony, I'm not sure if you've heard my ongoing theory about where we're going with Missy and the strange afterlife thing.
No, I don't think I've caught up with those episodes yet.
My theory is that Missy is either Clara or some kind of manifestation connected to Clara from when she jumped into the Doctor's time stream in the name of the Doctor. She shouldn't know that Clara is the impossible girl.
And again, Missy's the woman in the white room.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And she shouldn't know that that Clara is the impossible girl, but she put the ad in the newspaper. The argument that I've been going with is that as Clara being the impossible girl also makes her the impossible companion. And the thesis is that with every companion that goes with the Doctor for the most part, not all of them, but most of them, turn out for the better. They always, when they finish their journey with the Doctor, they're smarter, they're stronger, they have, you know, they're much more determined about getting the best and doing the best out of life that they can do, as evidenced by, you know, characters like Sarah Jane Smith and so on. And so they usually are healed by the Doctor, if you will. They go on this amazing journey and they are healed. But the Impossible Girl is the Impossible Companion. So instead of becoming better, she becomes worse. She becomes a villain.
That's interesting. I mean, I think that that certainly seems plausible. I have to admit that I kind of hope that's not the case, because I just, partially because it just, the more they bring back the Impossible Girl storyline, the less happy I'll be, because I really hated that storyline. So I'm kind of hoping, I like the idea that Clara now is no longer this, you know, mystery, but she's just, you know, the companion who's also trying to balance, you know, dating and being with a doctor. And that to me is much more enjoyable than the mystery from last season. But I mean, that could certainly be the direction they're going in, and certainly would be something that makes the, you know, feels like a very Moffat kind of twist.
I think, as far as Clara is concerned, one thing that we need to remember is that she is the counterpoint to Rose Tyler. Rose Tyler was the big bad wolf. Clara Oswald is Little Red Riding Hood. Every episode, she's wearing red.
Right.
Now, this is really interesting. The last three episodes, since she started lying to the Doctor and Danny, no red. She hasn't worn red in the last three episodes. This episode, there was one suit where she had a bit of a maroon thing at the end, and then last episode, that black suit she was wearing was like a very, very dark purple, but it's all been very, very dark colors and white, black, white, gray colors in the last three episodes. Moffat has always used color and palette to great advantage in, you know, in his series. I mean, you have a look at the episode "Listen," when they're on the last planet. The light from the sun in the sky is pink to highlight the pink family. He uses color immensely in all of his seasons so far, and I think it's very important. I think that's an important little character facet there.
You know, another thing is we had a monster villain, whatever, that was a robot, another machine.
Yeah, no, that was interesting as well. Oh, but we also had, here we have another data point too, Tom, about the ongoing plot, and that is the police officer.
Yeah.
Now, here's what's really interesting about this. Do you remember when we said that, or I said rather, I thought that perhaps the dead are not really dead, they're just being teleported. But in this episode, we saw the very gruesome result of, like, you know, charred remains hitting the ground.
Right, and it's not like he was missing his hand or anything like that when you saw it in heaven. Right.
So now there's a couple of possibilities here. Maybe he was injured and knocked unconscious and taken in by Missy and they restored to health with futuristic medical devices, possibly. I'm not buying this whole afterlife thing, though. I think it's a con.
Sure. I mean, I think there's going to be some sort of, sci-fi solution. I mean, it could, the other alternative is some sort of like preservation of consciousness, you know, similar to kind of what we saw in like Forest of the Dead.
I think it's connected to the character that he played on Torchwood.
You think so?
Yeah, I do. It's kind of supernatural, kind of strange.
It may also connect to the character he played in Pompeii too. I mean, Moffat has said that that's going to be something that he addresses at some point in the future. He never clarified it was going to be this season. It could be this season or the next one. But it's a Russell T. Davies plot point, and that they're working with on that. It's not a Moffat storyline. They're actually incorporating an RTD storyline about why Mr. Capaldi face shows up everywhere in the Doctor Who universe. And as a matter of fact, we heard from Capaldi in the first episode this season, why did I choose this face? It's like I'm trying to tell myself something, and that's going to key into it as well. As to what he's trying to tell himself, who knows at this point? I mean, at this point, with the dead body of the police officer showing up, I'm kind of lost as to how the afterlife fits into all this, because I thought I had it figured out at the beginning of the season when we were talking about how individuals are sacrificing their themselves in the name of the Doctor. But in this case, he had absolutely nothing to do with the Doctor.
Right, except just the proximity.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess that counts.
Well, I mean, the one thing that did interest me and pique my curiosity is that Missy didn't greet him. She left it to, like, one of her underlings.
Right.
You know,
and there's this whole thing about her being very busy today.
Yeah, you know, and the fact that she shows up after he says, "Oh, my God," you know, was also quite a little interesting data point, I thought. You know, she's obviously whatever realm she is, although we got a name, the Nethersphere. I thought that was interesting, the location where they're at. So who knows? I mean, it's at this point, I mean,
I'm bored with that storyline. Like,
are you really?
It didn't even exist. Yeah, yeah, I don't care about it at all.
I like. Really? I think it's just fun, like, you know, seeing like people pop up. I think it's because it's short enough and it's not no longer in every episode. I mean, I do want to see it advance. I don't want it to just, you know, if like five episodes from now we're still being like, hey, oh, you're not dead, you're in heaven, isn't it great? If that's
If they don't start like some kind of building in the next episode, then like I've already lost interest. I'm like, I don't care.
Well, usually you tend to find with the way that Moffat bowls in his overs, that he usually gets to around the middle of the season, and we usually have a bit of a big cracker involved with the season finale and the overarching plot. So there may be something in the next episode or the episode after. Speaking of which, actually, while we're on the talking about the next episode, what did you guys think of the schoolgirl Courtney Wood? Because she's in the next episode.
Oh, she is. I think I missed that in the trailer. I thought she was fun. I mean, I didn't see enough of her to, like, you know, have a really strong opinion. But all the scenes with her and the Doctor, I thought they had a really good dynamic.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amusing. I'm not sure if I'd like her as a recurring character too much or a companion per se. But I like the idea of her being in the next episode. And I'm not sure. It looks like it's an older version of her in the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, if she just pops up every now and again, you know, like the like stupid sidekicks from nearly every genre of sci-fi and fantasy.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, there's that one character that's quirky but not really important enough to show up for longer than like 2 minutes at the very beginning of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, that I think she should get old pretty fast. I mean, you get tired of her pretty fast, but having her kind of pop up once in a while, that could be fun.
Do you guys catch the Pink Floyd reference?
I did not.
You didn't catch the Pink Floyd? There was one scene in there where Clara, being the teacher, tells off the school kids for kicking the soccer ball among that big chess board. And the caretaker, the Doctor, looks up and he's whistling, "Hey, teacher, leave those kids alone," from Another Brick in the Wall.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. You'll catch it the next time you see it. And you'll be like, oh, God, how did I miss that? I thought that was really good. I thought that was rather enjoyable, to be perfectly honest with you. So we've got a few things, a few points that have come up with this particular episode relating to the overarching plot. Tom seems to be bored with it. I'm never bored with overarching plots. And Anthony seems to be pretty much okay with it. Our overarching rating out of 10 for this episode would be a 6 if we average everything out together. 6 out of 10, which is pretty much on par with the rest of this season so far, I would imagine. It's fairly close to the other ratings that we've given these episodes. Anything else we need to cover? And we've kind of blitzed through this whole episode pretty quickly tonight.
I guess one other thing I wanted to bring up, just because it's been interesting comparing it to how the relationship between Rory and Amy developed, was how they sort of escalated the relationship between Danny and Clara, and, you know, having him find out, which, I mean, obviously was going to happen given the plot of the episode, the conceit of the episode, and then also having her sort of confess that, you know, she's in love with him. And I guess I kind of had mixed feelings with that, because one of the things I really didn't like about how they handled Rory and Amy was I felt like it started out as this very kind of mundane, normal relationship, and then it got turned into this very epic romance, and I really don't want that to happen to this too. I like it when there's just sort of, you know, people who are into each other, but it doesn't have to be this, you know, big, you know, dramatic thing.
You know, I hate to be a bummer about this, but I'm getting the feeling that we're getting set up for a tragedy.
Yeah, I feel like Mr. Pink is not going to be accompanying the Doctor in the near future until something happens to Clara and he forces his way on the TARDIS.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Or perhaps something happens to Danny Pink, and that erases his you know, his children and grandchildren from history.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, wow. That would be a bummer.
That would be a bummer. But, if Clara is connected to Missy in some way, that would be something that would be a big motivating factor to seek revenge on the Doctor.
Right.
Potentially. The other thing I wanted to highlight, folks, is that not everyone is sold on the Clara-Missy connection like I am. The other possibility that we did mention was the character that was introduced in the last episode, director Cara Braxos, with all her clones. Tom and I both remarked about how similar the look and feel and fashion of those particular characters matched Missy.
I think there's something to that, although I think there's also something to, like, Stephen Moffat just really liking severe middle-aged women who are also kind of sexy.
Yeah, buddy.
He loves the MILF. That's what it is.
You got a type.
Stephen Moffat. Stephen Milfat.
Oh, yeah, that's the title of the episode.
That's the secret production title.
Do you guys see the trailer for the next episode? There's two trailers that are out there. There's one that's actually a short 3-minute preview from the episode, a clip from the episode, and there's the one that played at the end of this episode over the weekend. Spiders on the Moon.
It's freaky, man. They look like robotic spiders, though.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had realistic, horrific spiders in Doctor Who. Actually, I think it's the first time we've ever had realistic, horrific spiders in Doctor Who. Because
they're pretty disgusting.
The last time we've had spiders in Doctor Who was in Planet of the Spiders, and they were very terrifying.
I hope next episode they destroy the entire universe to get rid of those little bastards.
Well, the episode is called Kill the Moon.
Nope.
good title. It also seems like there's kind of an alien flavor, at least from the short preview that I saw.
Yeah.
It takes place on the moon, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Well, it looks like a haunted house story, kind of like in space, like Alien. You know, that's the kind of feeling I'm getting from
it. Right, you're trapped and lots of monsters are out and picking people off. And
yeah.
They have to make a terrible choice.
Yeah. It looks like a lot of fun, and I tell you what, though, they really are ramping up the darker episodes this season. I'm really getting that vibe. The dark vibe with this particular season.
That's why you say that, and they're going to hit us with another damn Robin Hood.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. All right, so we're about halfway through. Next week is going to be the middle point of Doctor Who this particular season. And I can't believe we're halfway through, but I tell you what, despite the Robin Hood episode that we keep barking on about, I'm really pleased with this season so far.
Yeah, I like this. I like that this at six, I'm feeling pretty confident.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel the same. I honestly, after seven, I was really kind of burnt out on the show, and I feel like these episodes have really gotten me really excited about it once again.
I think everyone was burnt out after the 50th, though, Anthony. I mean, if you look at season seven, I mean, the first half of that was not very good at all. The story writing was very, very subpar. It felt like a lot of those episodes were originally drafted to be two-parters and shoved into single episodes. The whole Amy and Rory thing was unnecessary that first half of that season. That basically they should have said goodbye at the end of Series 6, and it really just started amplifying and accelerating at the end of Series 7.
Right.
Clara came into it full-time. That was when it really became important and necessary. From the Bells of St. John onwards, every episode after that point was fantastic in that season. And right up to the 50th and the Christmas special. And by the end of the Christmas special, I mean, I've been a Doctor Who fan since I was a little kid, and even I was worn out. Well, I was all hooed out by the end of it, you know. And so I'm really happy with the way this season is. Even the previews for this season, by the way, they held a lot of things back. They didn't show very much footage at all. There was very little being put out there. And it just feels right. And it's progressing right, you know, I feel. So there we go. That's episode 6 of Doctor Who for Series 8, The Caretaker. Nice little fun episode. Fairly average for Doctor Who. It's definitely not up there with the classics, but it's certainly enjoyable nonetheless. We'll be back again next week. Anthony, can we count on you to join us again for another TARDIS Bloom this season?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Excellent. All right. We'll when we get off the call here, we'll get off the show, we'll schedule up another episode with you. And Tom, where can we catch you on the web, my friend?
You know, places.
There's a little place called VentureBeat, I hear.
Yes. Yeah.
What about you, Anthony? Where can we catch you on the web?
I write for about tech news at techcrunch.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Anthony Ha.
And, of course, you can catch me right here at geeksofdoom.com, where we post the TARDIS Blend weekly during the seasons of Doctor Who. And, of course, blendover.com, where I do my regular podcast. Terry Chavera is back on the show. We're recording on Saturdays now. Tom called it the best thing since Saturday morning cartoons, and I think he's right.
It's truth, even the Beetlejuice cartoon.
Yes, indeed. And I think I'd even hasten to say, Tom, it's better than the Golden Girls.
I'll give it to you.
Let's not get crazy.
And on Wednesday nights, Heavy Metal Historian. We'll catch you next time for another edition of TARDIS Blend, folks. See you later. Bye-bye.